I'm reading from a book by Wendell Stevens. It's called UFO Contact from the Pleiades, a Preliminary Investigation Report. The Billy Meyer story is probably the most famous contact story in the world, with numerous photos and many, many predictions. And many of those predictions have come true, including the prediction that the World Trade Center towers would be hit by terrorists. When people tell you that Billy Meyer is a liar, don't believe them. When they tell you that the photographs were faked, don't believe it. Instead, read everything you can about it before you reach your conclusion, because you need the facts, and the facts are found in what's written. I'm intending to read this entire book by Wendell Stevens. I started with Chapter 6. It's done. You can watch it. I'm now doing Chapter 1, and I will proceed through the book in order from this point on, skipping Chapter 6 because I already did it. Whenever I do a series that requires several days or even weeks to complete the whole book, some people get impatient and they want to read the next chapter before it's ready. Well, you can read the next chapter. The book is online. You don't have to wait for me. Each 15 minutes of reading time takes 12 hours. There's preliminary work before I read with the cards that I'm reading. There's audio editing, which takes a long time, requires a lot of patience, too. I have many ideas for videos, and I'm writing them down every day, and I'm writing the scripts. I'm recording, and I have 10 projects going right this minute, and UFO Contact from the Pleiades is only one of them. So if you finish a chapter and the next chapter is not ready yet, you can go to the book, or you can go to the webpage where Billy Meyer's information is, and you can read enough to keep you busy for weeks while I finish this book by Wendell Stevens. Now, Wendell Stevens was in the Air Force, and he began investigating UFOs. And when he got to the Billy Meyer case, he moved in. He moved into the compound. He lived there for a while. And he had a close relationship with Billy and the aliens. There was something like 26 attempts on Billy Meyer's life, because there are people in this world who do not want you to have information. They don't want you to know the truth. And the truth to them is like poison, because it spoils their whole agenda. And what the people are trying to do is they're digging around trying to find the truth. And when they're given propaganda and lies, it only works for a while. When the people discover they've been lied to, they no longer trust government. They no longer trust anyone, and they go around accusing everyone of being a fake, because that to them is safety. But the only real safety is being able to determine what is truth and what is fake. And what the government likes to do is mix a little bit of truth with a whole bunch of lies, and people are fooled by that. So they have control of the people. What I recommend is that you collect all the facts and make your decision. If you collect some of the facts and you make your decision, you made it too early. You need all the facts. For most of these claims of UFOs and photos and everything, for me, the jury is still out. I'm still collecting facts. People say, "Do you believe this?" I say, "I don't know yet." I'm still collecting the facts. So let's begin. I'll read. You watch. I'll find some pictures on the internet to add to my reading to make it more interesting. It's boring to look at text on the screen all the time, so I'll mix in some photographs. I won't put any photographs that I know to be fake, and if I discover later that they are a fake, I will put a notice on the video. I'm not interested in fakes. I bring to you the truth. My tea is whistling and I have to go. Okay, I'm back and let's begin. Chapter 1, Ascot and the Dalles. My preliminary investigation report on this case, published in 1982, began with the commencement of the face-to-face contacts with Semyasi and her team of Pleiadians, operating from a great mothership, and Meyer's photos of the Pleiadian ships. That was the case we were studying at the time. That, however, was not the beginning of Edward Meyer's contacts with extraterrestrials Nor was it the first time he had seen and photographed unidentified flying objects in the skies of Earth. His first sightings of this phenomena began when he was a small boy of 5 with his father when they lived in Bulak on the German border. That happened on the 2nd of June, 1942. It was only a sighting, but he knew then that this whole thing was different. Though he was unaware at that young age that he had accepted an arrangement before his birth, his was a chosen destiny of contacts, which was to give him no peace in this life. From then on, he could often see traveling stars when he looked up, mostly at night, but sometimes in daylight too. He distinguished these from the others because these were sometimes larger and sometimes smaller, and these stars made abrupt turns, flew zigzag patterns, and they sometimes just stopped in space. Remember, there were no satellites in those days. Then in late autumn of the same year, Meyer saw a bigger ball-shaped flying object traveling at slow speed. It slowed more and began to slowly descend. Gently, it came down, its metallic spherical shape clearly visible. Then all of a sudden, it just disappeared without making any noise. The sightings became more frequent until he began to hear a voice in his head and saw pictures. In November that same year, shortly before his 6th birthday, he saw a pear-shaped object suddenly drop from the sky and settle gently on the meadow grass in a woods near their home of Bulak. An old man took him into the ship and high above the earth, then brought him back to the same meadow and let him out. The ship then shot up vertically at high speed until out of sight. More sightings and communications continued until his 7th birthday on the 3rd of February 1944, when the voice became more personal and told him to work hard from now on, as he would be given knowledge in this manner. The speaker identified himself as Svath, the old man who had taken him aboard the pear-shaped machine earlier. 6 months later, in the summer of 1944, Svath returned in the silver pear-shaped flying object and picked him up again for a 4-hour session on his destiny and that of his world in his lifetime. A helmet appliance with many wire leads attached was used for this inculcation process. He was able to see and hear overwhelming things, and was imparted a great deal of knowledge, and told of events to come, much of which he did not understand at the time. Meyer was returned to the pickup site, and the ship disappeared straight up at high speed until it was out of sight. Only a few hours after that experience, a new voice began to speak to him telepathically. This one was young, strong, and full of energy. It was female, and told Meyer he could call her Asket, and that she would be his contact now. Asket communicated with him regularly from then on, and imparted more phenomenal knowledge, and then guided his destiny to give him certain experiences in the next few years to temper him for what was to come. It was she who made it possible for him to travel his world, and it was she who led him into and through his trials and many tests to give him the experiences he would need. Asket told Meyer that her origin was in what she called the Dal universe, incredibly a counterpart universe to this of our own reality. She said that our universe existed because of hers, and hers because of ours. We were related in some way, because the two separate universes had a common origin, and that each existed because of the other. And if one ceased to exist, the other would likewise cease to be. There were other universes involved also, which further complicated the situation. An oversimplification would be to consider one an antimatter counterpart of the other. This concept is not entirely unheard of, and has been treated extensively in science fiction. Even orthodox science is recently discovering antimatter and opposite realities. Fritjof Capra discussed the scientific basis of these opposing realities extensively in his Tao of Physics, and showed that matter equations simply do not work without taking into account the opposite or antimatter aspect. The Feynman diagrams used to explain particle reactions in high-energy physics demonstrate this process well. and they are found to be completely reversible. When matter is theoretically annihilated in an acceleration chamber, some of it is only changed into its opposite aspect and disappears from our reality into that other. Balance is maintained by an exchange of energy in the form of heat or light. After a UFO experience many years ago, Anthony Serratides, a Dow chemical engineer, was suddenly awakened to a new concept of matter and energy being shown way back then that there is no ultimate particle in physics as it was being taught. That what appears to be protons, electrons, gluons, muons, quarks, neutrinos, etc., and all their invisible to us antiparticles are nothing more than photon quanta organized in different ways. The photon quanta are not visible until they become organized into something, and they can just as easily become organized into an antimatter something from our point of view. He visualized a photon quanta as a part of a wave. It had vector and curvature, curl or spin. He discovered that the vector could be reversed by simply inverting the curve. Or the curve could be reversed by turning it over at 90 degrees to the other axis. In either case, its accumulation into matter was the same, but now opposite, or antimatter. The Serratides diagram of an electron alone had some 228 parts. He spent years developing his concepts and diagrammed many atoms in a book titled The Structural Nature of Matter, and then went on to diagram more atoms and some molecules in another volume called The Universal Field Law and the Universal Law of Creation of Mass Energy, both by Anthony D. Serratides. What he learned was that matter can be instantly converted into antimatter by simply inverting the quanta, which changes its direction of spin, and that they mutually repel each other and do not seek to cancel out. The antimatter world is no more rare than the matter world, as they are one and the same in different aspect. There is as much antimatter as there is matter, and they balance. Serratides is best known as the inventor of saran wrap, the thinnest, lightest, strongest, and most vapor-resistant of all films up to that time. And it was a product of his new ideas about chemistry coming out of his new physics. He may someday be recognized as the father of the Renaissance in physics. He was not alone in these concepts, though. Wilbert B. Smith, BAMA, former head of the Canadian Department of Transport's Project Magnet, entertained similar ideas as he developed what he called his quadrature concept, which was published after his death in 1962 under the title The New Science, authored by him. He too found that there is no ultimate physical particle, that all is the result of awareness within the creative consciousness. Simply awareness in the tempic field of the creative consciousness produces vector and curl. Huh? Thank you, Wendell, for explaining all that. I always thought the Tao universe was pretty weird. Antimatter and all that stuff. Now I see that it's like a mirror reflection, the other half. But I still don't understand what would happen if you touched her skin. I mean, that's matter coming in contact with antimatter. Wouldn't everything blow up? Hicks card. That vector and curl is equivalent to a photon quantum, which is the result of awareness impinging on the tempic field of the all. Huh? Simultaneous with the action of a vector and curl comes the reaction of vector and curl energies in the opposite directions, resulting in opposite manifestation, maintaining the balance in the all. Do you guys get that? 'Cause I'm lost. The ultimate result in the physical world is observed as matter and antimatter. He also concluded that nothing more than awareness impinging on the tempic field of the all consciousness was the actual first cause, and the origin of the photon, and ultimately matter. Matter is nothing else than the final stages of thought manifest with energy someplace in between. Okay, now I've got it, because I have a little bit of prior knowledge. The Pleiadians told us that our Bible was wrong. When they gave us the Bible, they said, in the beginning there was thought, and we wrote it down as light. In the beginning there was light. No, in the beginning there was thought. And now the physicists are saying that the initial everything starts with thought. I'll read this last sentence again. Matter is nothing else than the final stages of thought manifest, with energy someplace in between. Well, Einstein said that energy and matter are interchangeable, and the Pleiadians are telling us they're going to give us a device that creates things we want and need from energy. It turns energy into matter, and we're able to have a hot dog or a Coke or some French fries without the chip, the RFID chip. And I'm looking forward to that. Land the ships and let's get it on, okay? We're ready for you. I need a hot dog. Wilbert B. Smith became a UFO contactee in 1954 and carried on extensive dialogues with the extraterrestrial friends visiting him. I would love to know where they're from. Were they from the Dell universe? Or were they grays? There are 15 different types of grays at least. Short grays, tall grays, etc. It was from these dialogues that he evolved his quadrature concept to explain the then unknowns in physics and came up with ideas very similar to those of Sarotides, but expressed in different terms, in which the antimatter reality was the essential balancing part. So it's not only not a weird universe, it's a necessary universe. Then, in 1960, before Ascot picked Meyer up in Switzerland, a South African electrician, Edward F. White, began to have contact with extraterrestrials who told him they came from an antimatter or counterpart universe. When they learned to navigate the polarity barrier between the two universes, they were amazed to discover our life and existence similar to theirs in opposite reality, and over time establish contact across the barrier and learn to navigate and explore their antimatter counterpart, our phenomenal universe. They also learn to communicate across the barrier and maintain contact with the Earthman by electromagnetic means, which they carried on for over 25 years. During that time, over 1,000 hours of verbal dialogue was recorded on audio tape and preserved. Well, let's hear it. Where is it? My God! These experiences are reported in a 305-page illustrated book titled UFO Contact from Planet Koldus, a Cosmic Dialogue, authored by Carl van Vlierden. Well, I read that book and it was boring. And the co-author on that is Wendell Stevens. So that explains why there's a plug here. But I found that book to be very boring. Wendell's a much better writer. UFO Contact from Planet Koldus. But Edward Meyer knew nothing of this at the time of his contacts with the Dalls, who claimed a counterpart universe origin. All he knew was that Ascot was telling him that her Dal universe was the opposite of ours, and that her people had learned to navigate what she called the time barrier. Time in this sense being the kind of vibrations or kind of reality in which they normally existed. Huh? She explained that her native counterpart was much like ours, but that the heavens and luminaries were all different. However, they were of the same cumulative mass and energy. Once they learned how to safely cross the barrier between the two universes, which coexist in time and space, they learned to navigate and explore ours as well as theirs, and they learned much and constantly transmitted information to their home system. Ooh, give me some of that. The Dalls discovered the Pleiadians before Earth and learned to get along with and to work compatibly with them, who were already freely traveling in space. Ooh. The Dalls shared their technology with the Pleiadians, which then allowed creatures of our universe to visit the Dal universe in Pleiadian ships. The Dalls discovered Earth through the Pleiadians and their interests here. Svath was a Pleiadian who handed Meyer over to Ascot for development and preparation for a future Pleiadian plan. Wow. Why couldn't they include me in some of this? The Dalles had an active Earth project going on at that time. Meyer was picked back up in a Pleiadian mission in January 1975 with the renewed overt contact with him sometime after the last of his preparation by Ascot. We reported those developments in the preliminary report of investigation. In that report, we bypassed the earlier preparation by Ascot in order to concentrate on the Pleiadian contacts themselves, a step we have been criticized for since. It has now become necessary to retreat and fill in some of the background preceding that first meeting with Samyasi in the meadow in Switzerland. Here we are speaking only of the contacts with the Pleiadians in this present lifetime. Sorry, folks, that's the end of chapter 1. Thanks for listening.